pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
And welcome to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday morning. Text line 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with me, your show host, all you do is text us and we'll respond to whatever it is that's on your mind. Coming up on the program today, Baron Coleman, a former radio host up in Montgomery, also a columnist and a lawyer in Nashville now, will join us. We'll talk about the Jeffrey Epstein sort of saga, this latest chapter. Not something I would consider myself to be an expert on, but we're going to talk to him about it. I think he's got some thoughts and sort of what's going on here, the conflicting messages, the contradictions from Pam Bondi and the DOJ and Cash Patel. What happened there? Yeah, well, in my opinion, I feel like it, and maybe I'm naive, that maybe the pro-Trump forces of 24 overplayed it, and now we're never going to really know what happened. I don't know. I think it's a mess, though, the way this administration's handled it. There was no client list. Anyway, so we'll talk to Barrett about that in about 30 minutes. Andrew Sorrell, running for Secretary of State. And now as an opponent, Carolee Dobson. We heard from her last week. We'll hear from Andrew today in the 10 o'clock hour. At 11 o'clock hour, as we always do, we'll talk to Alabama Republican Party Chairman John Wall in 2.5 hours. So stay tuned. Or that, once again, text line 251-343-0106. That's all you got to do is text me. The news is, to me, it's just a little dry right now. Obviously, I think we're starting to get some of these hero stories from the Texas flood. Those are always compelling. The left is, I don't get their tactic here. Everything is Trump's fault. And that seems a little early for that. What could have been done better? But the acts of God, not everything could be Hurricane Katrina. So I'm kind of interested in that. Also, tariff mania is upon us. What do we think about the way the president's going about this? August will be here before you know it. Well, the markets haven't really reacted to this, so that makes me think that this is not as bad as they say it is. Something else. I was listening to Quinn, as I always do. He didn't quite get my blood pressure. Well, he doesn't actually get my blood pressure up, but he was talking about media. And yes, a few things on media. There's something I do know something about. And how there's this moral equivalence. Well, the right does it too. But Dan, on Dalton and Dan, Mobile Mornings, was like, well, the left has this strategic advantage. They create their own conventional wisdom, and then it's amplified by the ABCs and the CBSs and NBCs and so on and so forth. And they sort of invent whatever assumptions we're supposed to operate off of. They decide that the big, beautiful bill is going to cut Medicaid and people are going to suffer. And then all the, objective news outlets run with it, and they figure out angles, and they make it a sort of a stated fact, right? The results are in, and we have concluded that people will die because of the big, beautiful bill. Well, like, how did we get here? Well, like, and he asked Quinn Hillier, who's had multiple jobs over his long and storied career in this arena of journalism. And he's like, well, you know, the right does that too. But let's kind of talk about that for a moment. How do we get to this point? First off, there's probably, like, by a measure of 8-1 or 4-1 or somewhere in that realm, left-wing media to right-wing media. There's a reason why we say, what, ABC, CBS, NBC, New York Times, Washington Post, Politico, MSNBC, CNN, whatever. News, old right does it too. What's that, Fox News? Maybe Newsmax or something? You can't say the Wall Street Journal. You don't have as many right-of-center voices. Rush Limbaugh, well, he's not around anymore. There's no, like, who are the giants in conservative media? But why is there a conservative media? Where did it come from? Like, why where did this marketplace of this media landscape, how did it come to be that we would have left-wing media, and then you have left-wing media kind of posing as objective media. Then you have right-of-center media, unabashedly right-wing. This somewhere in a third dimension is like CNBC or whatever and Bloomberg. Well, it's because the media is so left-wing that it created this marketplace. That those of you, a lot of you listening to my voice right now, are like, I'm tired of this biased left of center media. I need to go look somewhere else. Rupert Murdoch in the 1990s says, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to give Ted Turner a run for his money. We're going to Bill Gates. Remember Bill Gates at NBC, MSNBC? Where do you think the MS came from? We can't have this. There's an unserved population out there who will watch this and we can sell ads. And everything kind of came from that. I mean, it actually came from talk radio, I would say. Roger Ailes, do you remember the old, I talk about Rush Limbaugh all the time, but he's kind of the impetus for all of this. When they finally disbanded the fairness doctrine, and then he became extremely popular, and people were like, first off, like Clinton and those guys tried to stop it, complained about it. Became just so popular. Everybody was talking about this Rush Limbaugh in the late 80s, early 90s. And then they said, well, why don't we do this on television? And then Fox News came to be. Remember, Rush had his TV show. Well, that's where this came from, because people were so dissatisfied with the left media. They did this to themselves. But you could kind of watch this continuum, this narrative, like as it goes. And what's happened is, like, you had in the early 2000s, they were trying to shut Fox down. You had the rise of Media Matters and all of these, like, left-wing attacks, and Fox News was the devil. Yet it got extraordinary ratings. It was making money hand over fist. Bill O'Reilly was like a printing press. If he could have kept it together, I mean, his show would just sell. But he couldn't. We know how that ended. But then Fox News was born, and like it's kind of done what it's always done. Every now and then there'll be a retreat. When Trump lost in 2000, they kind of backed off of Trump, and then a year later they're back on board. Well, whatever. I mean it. But the left of media, left of center media, has gotten crazier and crazier. Now look, out of Fox News, there's been other like Newsmax and One America and things like that that have come to be. But I'm not sure that they quite have a market place just yet. You can only slice that pie so many different ways. But what's happened with the left media is they've gotten a little more outspoken, a little more full of themselves, a little more self-righteous, to the point that, hey, we have a president with authoritarian tendencies. Everyone said that about a sitting U.S. president, duly elected, popular vote, until Trump. So there's this moral equivalence thing. Is, you know, you only have these right of center voices where they've really taken off other than Fox News is online. But online, it's more democratized. It's more of a reflection of the country, I would think. Not exactly. I mean, Twitter's not real life, but it's more reflection than, say, CNN or cable news in general, or broadcast news, or print media. But the only reason you have it is because you were underserved by the left, or what became the left. And so as things have kind of evolved, I mean, I think we saw peak media freakout during the 24 cycle. And the thing that's always bothered me was like, well, there's no way a Republican will ever be able to beat this. I mean, this is a massive machine. When Democrat political functions and apparatuses are like inventing talking points that are that become like within hours stated facts and assumptions about life and we just are told to assume this is reality and not manufactured. How do you beat that? Well, what's happened, and I think this is still kind of underway here, people just don't trust the media anymore. Don't believe your lying eyes. It really where people soured on the media. Not necessarily, it wasn't necessarily political. I think it was COVID. And all the things you were told about the COVID-19 pandemic. And I'm not talking about you guys listening to this show. You guys listening to this show are pretty coached up. But the public in general, so when the talking points from the DNC got sent out in say, September of 2024, and every media outlet calling J.D. Vance weird, talking about Trump as like having Hitler tendencies, and so on and so forth. People tuned it out. It didn't matter. Such a distrust of our institutions. None of this stuff, it doesn't land anymore. It doesn't hit like it used to. Let's get a break and you'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5.
The old town square under the barbershop pole, they set me up in the chair.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday morning. Baron Coleman coming up in the next segment. Stick around for that. Big Enos. Jeff, they'll never release the client list because if they did, the government would collapse. Maybe not all. Most politicians are compromised. They'll never allow themselves to be held accountable. See, a lot of people believe that. I don't think they did themselves any favors. Let's operate on the assumption innocent until proven guilty. To be open-minded about all this. People just aren't going to. If what they are telling us is really the case, they're just not going to buy it. You don't get that presumption of innocence, I suppose. Social media pays on reactions, so they have to get as many reactions as possible to make up for the loss of TV viewership. They are all the same. I don't know, understand really why media put such an emphasis on social media. I guess they think if you see something on Facebook, it's more of a local media thing. You see something on Facebook, you'll tune in to the 5 o'clock eyeball evening news or whatever. But that's sort of the movement now. Jerry, I've been working on Danny B, and I'm very proud of how far he's come at the present pace. I could see him slapping the you-know-what out of Quinn in the near future. I think he's coached up pretty fast. Dan and I came along on 106.5 about the same time. I was kind of warned, like, hey, he may not be on board with all this conservative stuff, but I think now that he's had I think he's taken like a very objective approach here. And then this is like instructive for like, if you have any relatives, don't, you can't just pin them down on what you saw on Newsmax last night, right? But just like take an objective look at the news and you kind of see through the smoke and mirrors and you figure out, well, not that the right is always, straightforward and honest. There's a lot of kind of cult of personality and things of that nature. And these guys on the left, everything is a crisis. Everything is a scandal. And it's, after so many years of that, everything can't be a crisis. Everything can't be a scandal. The world doesn't work that way. And he's maybe indicative of how the public views a lot of this. Like, he's a good barometer of public opinion outside of the talk radio bubble, for example. That, maybe they're not as bad as we're being told. Maybe there are real people who just want to be left alone or don't want the government intruding in their life or want like these virtues like taking personal responsibility and the culture not getting too far out in the left in the ditch over there and not having like these values imposed upon them by like your library or your city council or whatever. They just have some Dr. Seuss books or whatever it is, the Dick and Jane books, to be checked out and teach kids to read and not try to like socially engineer them. Not try to stop global warming at the county level, like stuff like that. Like know your place in society. Edward Bernays, James Burnham, Congress of Cultural Freedom and the Pusher to Push Button Millennium. It'd be good for every person who can read and learn about propaganda and psychological warfare is used. It's easier to navigate political discussion when you understand the psychological component at a paradigm level. Elements in our country have a desire to turn its people into programmable automations for a long time. And then Jerry, I would never have anyone from New Jersey in my family. Can you pick your family like that? 251-343-0106 is the text line. Stay tuned. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Dutch and your coal miner. Let me thank you for your time. You work a 40-hour week for a living.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. Text line 251-343-0106. Need to be in touch with the program. All you got to do is text me. Joining us now on the line, we're always appreciative of his time, but former radio host up in Montgomery, now is a full-time attorney in Tennessee, but Baron Colbin joins us. Baron, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you for making time. Obviously, been following you on social media, and I guess what I wanted to kind of talk about, your take on Jeffrey Epstein. The weird sort of contradictions from the Trump administration, from the DOJ, and I mean, I'm not sure what to make of it. I was always kind of skeptical that we would ever find anything out, but where are you on it these days?
No, I share the same skepticism. I don't think we're ever going to find anything out. I don't know that I ever thought we would find anything out. I think the key to Epstein is that it's not Epstein. It's so much deeper and bigger than Epstein. Epstein was one small tentacle of a very large global compromise and blackmail operation, and they're not going to compromise that entire system to out the details of one single component of it.
Yeah, and, I don't know what we expected to find, though. All the circumstances are so questionable and how it came to be, but like, I don't know, is it really, let's say how deep do you think this goes? What does this do with a public reaction? I mean, and we're all baselessly speculating here, kind of what we think we know, but is it really something that would undermine the government, if you would?
No, I don't think so. I think a lot of people right now are frustrated because Epstein was something they could grasp and they could understand. And so they thought, okay, here's my opportunity to learn more about how things really work. But the reality is JFK was killed 62 years ago and we still don't know what happened there. The file is still not completely released. The truth about 9/11, there's still pages of that report that are, if the report's even any good, but there's still pages of that report that are hidden. And we go on with life, right? We have elections. We elect Biden. We elect Trump. We elect Obama. You know, we keep going through the motions because, as I always go back to, our lives are pretty good, particularly here in the United States. We have a pretty high standard of living across the board. I mean, our poor people are fat. Where else in the world does that happen? And so there's a lot of incentive for people to sort of just bury their head in the sand and shake their fists in frustration and then get up the next morning and go to work. Nobody's ever held accountable. We'll still have elections next November. We'll still have elections 2 years after that for president. And life will continue to go on. And they knew that. They knew that when they either deleted the files or hid the files or just plain refused to release the files. And again, this is Epstein was a big deal because we knew about it. But it's just one very small part of how the world works. The world's economy runs on compromise. It runs on a blackmail. It runs on defects to character that are held over your head so that people can get what they want, that ultimately corporate interests can get what they want. And they're not going to compromise that entire system just to mollify people about what Jeffrey Epstein was up to.
Well, what was your expectation with President Trump? I mean, we thought things would change, that this would become something that we would find out because it's a new sheriff in town, but it just seems seemed to be I don't know, quite the same, but somewhere along those lines in that realm.
We also thought Trump wouldn't bomb Iran on behalf of Israel, right? So I mean, there's a lot about Trump we expected when he ran. His campaign rhetoric, frankly, does not match the way he governs, and that's fine. Most people's don't. But I think people expected something different from Trump than we will actually get. I mean, he was president for 4 years before. He could have released the RFK files. He could have released the MLK files. He could have released the JFK files. Frankly, he could have released a lot about Epstein before. He could have released a lot about what happened on 9/11. There's a lot he could have done, and he didn't. So I don't know why people got all up in arms and said this time is different. I mean, he had a chance, and he did not come clean on all of those things before. So I don't know why people would expect that he comes clean on it now. But keep in mind, Trump benefited and became very, very wealthy, a multibillionaire, from the same system that Jeffrey Epstein was perpetrating, that he was propping up. And so, you know, it's hard for us who bang the clock 40 hours a week to understand how the corporate world really works, how the globalist world really works. But this is how it works. This is how it works. And they're going to get away with it again because they know no one's going to do anything. No one's going to say anything. If they can keep, you know, printing money and raising the debt ceiling $5 trillion every few years, and you can go get a gallon of milk for $3 and a gallon of gas for $4, you're going to be fine. You're not going to say anything. Nothing's going to change.
Well, and do you ever think Trump was of the mindset that he would be that change agent? That maybe at one point, maybe when he was running, yeah, I'm going to do all this stuff. And then we saw this in his first term, as you're talking about it, but he had like guys like Jared Kushner and Gary Cohn and guys like that in his ear that were steering him in the wrong direction. Is there maybe the possibility that he's got some folks in his ear right now that say, hey, you don't want to do this, you don't want to do it this way or whatever?
I maintain, and this is where I get a little fringe, and maybe that's why you have me on from time to time. I maintain that there had to be something, some sort of an assassination attempt on his daughter's life. Ivanka Trump was very, very public during the first Trump campaign. She was extremely public during the first 10 months of his presidency, and then after Las Vegas, she disappears off the face of the map. She stops doing public appearances. She no longer goes to the White House. She begins to live a very private life. And whether it was the Las Vegas event or something near about that time, something changed in Trump that October, and October 2017, and he's never been the same since. I think once you get in and you see the beast, the belly of the beast, you realize it's not about me. You know, Donald Trump is an 80-year-old man. If something, God forbid, and I don't want ill will to happen to any public official, but if something was to happen to Trump, he's lived a long, fruitful life. He's had a great, he has a great legacy. But he also loves his family very deeply. And I feel like if he felt like there was something that would put his family's safety in jeopardy, he would back off. And I think that's what happened. I think I could pinpoint about when. It was about October of 2017 when Ivanka Trump disappeared.
But if that's the case, then why would he run for president again?
You know, there's no one reason people run for president. You know, he maybe wanted to get his tax policy extended. Maybe he wanted to, help marginally change the American system on the very periphery. But I don't think he ran for president again, despite what he said. I don't think he ran for president again to scatter to the ends of the earth the intelligence agencies that tried to set him up and have him in prison for life the first time he ran. I don't think that's why he ran the second time. I think by that time he knew he couldn't do that and he wasn't going to try.
Well, and so here we are, and we could talk about kind of overall this term, but let's just start with Iran, and a lot of people let down about that. Obviously, this discussion about Epstein, I read this morning, sending more weapons to Ukraine. This isn't exactly the ideal scenario for a lot of his supporters, I think.
No, it's not. But again, it doesn't matter because the people who are really in control, and again, it wasn't Epstein. Epstein was part of the problem. This is much bigger than Epstein. Again, go back to Bob Barr's father, who first hired Jeffrey Epstein at a high school, you know, 50 years ago or whenever it was. And Jeffrey Epstein was basically a high school grad, college dropout at a prestigious boarding school, who's brought in to teach math. Well, Donald Barr is writing books about, you know, raping children, and then Bill Barr, not Bob Barr, Bob Barr was a different congressman. Bill Barr ends up the attorney general on two different occasions, in this country once under Trump and completely undermined and controlled Trump when he got in office. I mean, this is something that goes back. Jeffrey Epstein wasn't involved in the JFK assassination, but the same actors, the same organization, the same institution was involved in the JFK assassination, which is why you'll never learn of it. This is so much bigger than Epstein. And I think it's honestly too big to stop, and it's too big for Trump to do anything about. So he's just going to play the game within the confines of the rules that are set out before him.
Okay, well, let's pull on this thread. If that is what's going on, like who's really the mastermind here? Like who, you know, is it by committee? Like how does this say kind of buttoned up as long as it has?
I don't know the answer to that. I think if anyone knew the answer to that, they would either be in on it or in great danger. And it's not, I don't think it's a single person or a single family or something like that. I just think there's a, oh gosh, I'm trying to dance around this very, very carefully. World War I didn't happen in a vacuum. World War II didn't happen in a vacuum. Hitler's rise didn't happen in a vacuum. Vietnam didn't happen in a vacuum. The formation of the Soviet Union didn't happen in a vacuum. The founding of Israel didn't happen in a vacuum. All the wars in the Middle East didn't happen in a vacuum. They all are the same cause that produced a Jeffrey Epstein. Epstein was one mechanism that was operational within this structure, and Epstein was sloppy and greedy and a big old hornball and ended up getting caught. But he was an expendable component of this greater system. But the system is driven by trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars of wealth. You know, if you go to certain areas of town after midnight and you've got $50 in your pocket, your life is in great danger because there are people who will kill you for $50. How much more will people do for trillions of dollars of economic access? And that's the story. That's what is happening. And that is why it's never going to come to a halt. That's why Trump can't get his hands around it. It's just too, it's too big, and there's too much momentum behind it.
Joined by Baron Coleman here on the program for just a few more minutes. So, I mean, this is sort of it. Then you sound like, well, we assume there's this thing that exists, and we're never going to be able to find out at some point really what's going on, or something of that sort. That we're never going to know the truth about sort of how the world works.
Yeah, you're never going to know why JFK was killed and who killed him. You're never going to know truly why 9/11 happened and who was responsible. You're never going to know how Trump was almost assassinated in Butler, Pennsylvania. You're never going to know what happened in Las Vegas in 2017. You're never going to know anything about how Epstein's operation worked and who was involved. You're just not. And that is a tough pill for Americans to swallow, because we have this naive notion that we somehow control our government and our destiny. And the reality is we don't. We just sort of play the game for the 80 to 100 years we're here on Earth, and then we pass on. But the system remains. It will continue to operate. It's been operating long before any of us were alive, long before any of the players who are playing in the game right now were alive, and it will continue to exist after that. Yeah. It's an unfortunate reality, but it's true.
Do you think people in the administration know, like Pam Bondi or Kash Patel or Dan Bongino or, you know, all the John Ratcliffe guys like that? Do you think they have a grasp of how big this is?
I think they know it's bigger than them and they can't do anything about it. Yeah. You know, Bond, you're talking about Pam Bondi, who had the Epstein list on her desk, and then there is no list, that Pam Bondi. Kash Patel and Dan Bongino, who had podcasts talking about how they were going to get to the bottom of it if they ever got their chance to get back in power, and they were going to release all the information, and then they dutifully run out and say, oh, well, it turns out there wasn't anything really happening at all anyway. I mean, he killed himself, and there were no clients. Yeah. You know, I don't know whether they show you a different version, a different view of the JFK assassination. I don't know if they come in and they read you in and they say, look, here's what's going to happen to you and your family if you ever say anything. So play the game. I don't know if it's that base or if it's more of a, you just get in and you get the sense And you kind of understand, okay, I really don't have a play here, so I just better get along.
Yeah, because didn't Trump say, well, if you knew what I knew, you wouldn't want to release all of this too? And I think he said that, and then there's just sort of this, I don't know, this sort of, well, you know, there was really nothing there to begin with. There's a lot of contradictions here. But if everything you say is true, they have badly mishandled this, and there's going to be continue to be a lack of trust in our institutions for that reason.
Well, tell me this: everything Trump does, Trump goes outside and he says, "Man, it's sunny outside." The left, the Democrat Party, the mainstream media, they all panic and say, "Oh, Trump is out of touch. There's clouds in the skies. There's rain in the forecast. He's out of. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He's evil. He's orange." Who on the left is outraged over the fact that this memo comes out saying Epstein did nothing? Nobody. You hadn't heard a peep from anyone. I mean, they all know, too. They're all playing the same game. You know, it's the same reason why they all fall in line on every foreign war. It's the same reason why they all fall in line eventually on debt ceiling raises, that they all fall in line on every major thing. They are all in lockstep. It is a uniparty in Washington, D.C. on some of these major issues. And that's why you see Trump also falling in line, Bondi also falling in line, Cash Patel and Dan Bongino falling in line. This is just the way it is. It's unfortunate. It's a reality, but it's the way it is. And we will never know. We will never, ever know, and it will never be stopped.
Baron, we're up against a break here, but thanks for coming on this morning. Folks want to find you online. Where can they look?
I don't know. I have my podcast right now. It's Real Baron Podcast, but it's temporarily offline because I've got something going on for work that I had to pull it down temporarily, but it'll be back up probably in a month or so. You can go there on YouTube, Real Baron Podcast. It'll be empty right now, but I'll repopulate all the old shows and start the new shows back up here in the next month or so.
Baron, thanks for making time. We'll talk again soon.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Always good to be here. Thank you.
All right. Baron Coleman, ladies and gentlemen, let's get a break here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show. Enough to talk. 106.5.
Remember knowing was a lonesome whistle. Get on me, want to know, Hank, why do you drink?
Back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us on this Tuesday morning. Bunch of text, surprise. Let's say this about Baron. Like, it's a unique perspective. The part I have really with a mass government conspiracy and believing in really buying into it, I mean, after spending time in Washington, D.C., meeting people, you work in all these different government agencies and all these like lofty places of power, and even some of them with Ivy League credentials. I'm always underwhelmed by it, always unimpressed. And it's like, there's no way that something this elaborate could be pulled off by these underwhelming people. I'm not saying that there aren't things about what our federal government does that we're not aware of. But like, human beings are fallible. We're all flawed. We're all fallen. And you've got to be like batting near 1,000 to pull like some of this stuff off, I believe. So I'm not saying, I do think this though. I think there is a weird contradiction coming out of the Trump administration on the Epstein stuff. But on the Epstein stuff, I think maybe they overplayed it. Maybe they way overplayed it as a campaign thing. And then it's sort of underwhelming. I don't know. I there's all kinds of possibilities. I'm not saying that that's an objective fact. But I was always skeptical that we would ever find out really what was going on there. Don, good morning, Jeff. I hope you're doing well today. While the Democrats do what they always do, taking advantage of a tragedy
pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FN Talk 106.5. Hour number two begins right now. Text line, we got a bunch of texts to get to. We'll get cracking on those in just a moment. 251-343-0106. Still come on the program about 30 minutes. Our state auditor, Andrew Surreal, running for Secretary of State. And then in the 11 o'clock hours, we always do John Wall, chairman of the Alabama Republican Party. Something happened yesterday here in Alabama. Maybe not a surprise, but maybe a mild disappointment. Governor Ivey appointed Hal Nash as the chairman of the Alabama Board, not to be confused with the Bureau, but the Board of Pardons and Paroles, replacing Lee Gwofny, who we had Paul DeMarco on to kind of talk about this, who apparently wanted to be reappointed, had been very, very, very critical of paroles, to the point where Democrat lawmakers and others were griping about it. A lot of gripes from Chris England, from Tuscaloosa. It was a chronic complaint of the institutional left in this state. Sort of online Democrats like Beth Shelburne and Kyle Whitmire, Josh Moon. And Lee Gwofny does not get reappointed. Governor Ivey brings in someone different. Now, there have been a few. Now, remember, you got to remember also this, the sitting attorney general running for U.S. Senate, Steve Marshall, went out on a limb and said, hey, Governor Ivey, please reappoint Lee Gwofny. So the backstory here is, do you remember the Jimmy Lee Spencer episode? I think he gets paroled, goes out and kills his victim's family. And somebody says, hey, we need to take a look at our parole process. It's a little too free-willing, a little, you know, like we're letting too many bad, bad people out. So they brought in Judge Graddick and Lee Gwofny and some others. Well, Judge Graddick's like the first to go. They dispatch him almost immediately. Democrats did not like him. But Lee Gwofny remained in place. Now, look, let's keep this in mind. Her term expired, so she was, I mean, she was either going to be reappointed or have to take a walk. There's also, like, Governor Ivey's one who will leave vacancies on these boards. Just to look at the Ethics Commission. But, like, I was expecting a little more of a celebratory reaction from the left in this state over this news, and there's been nothing. And I know this is small potatoes. We're talking about the Pardons and Parole Board. Please give me some no-dos. I'm totally bored with this discussion. This was a big deal to these guys. You can't help but wonder, like, what kind of negotiating or discussions were held about this. But I've yet to see, like, a real reaction from anybody. Doesn't have meta, says this is for Dalton. A name texter. They are trying again, Gulf Shores High School gym. Yes, where the raid was. Be dark. One word can be changed in the statement, and the whole statement is changed. Be dark ads. Can't believe anything you hear, only half of what you see. And P. Diddy was way worse than Epstein. He is dead. Diddy is going home. What about that? How do we know if he was worse? Mike, Barrett Colby was dead on when he says Trump's presidency so far is very underwhelming. You've even got the Trump administration floating amnesty. Terry, I always felt Epstein was a front for a deep state honey trap compromise operation to co-opt world leaders and prominent people. There's a lot of theories. Was it deep state or was it Mossad or, well, what was going on there? Or maybe it was just a crazy guy. A bad person. I mean, sometimes you can just have bad people, right? Hey, Jeff. This is from my name texter. Oh, nope. This is Billy D. This is from Billy D. So it sounds to me like whoever is drinking from the crystal skull is the one that, like, is running the whole organization. Is what I understand? I don't know. I mean, yeah, I mean, I guess if that's your interpretation, no one can tell me. Like, okay, we got this deep state. Trump's been unable to, like, really get to the bottom of it, or he acknowledges it and just kind of lets it go. Is, like, the whole, like, constitutional republic, government off for by the people thing, just sort of a sham? Or is this just something on the margins? I mean, I don't know. Otto, Jeff, was your guest talking about the Illuminati? I didn't hear him say that. Mariner, he's right, you know. Toothless Bamber, love the way Baron concludes. That's just the way it is. Tim, where do you find these people? This guy is a whack job. You may as well let Ricky come on the show. Terry, perhaps there's still an ongoing investigation involving Epstein, and that is why we can't not get any info on it. And they text, remember Donald Barr was old OSS. It is common for spies and people who are deeply geopolitical to write revelations in novels. Frank Herbert and The Dune is a good example of this. So is Ian Fleming and James Bond. And then Butterknife. Jeff, if Baldwin County has a flash flood like we did in 2014, we're going to have the same issue. Developers are flashing a lot of money, and our cities are not keeping up with the infrastructure, not even close. They're putting money over the safety of the citizens. I don't think we have obviously being on the bay. I mean, there's a reason the Eastern Shore was settled on the bluff, right? There's altitude. Now, I don't know geography of Baldwin County, if you have these, where you could have this kind of a flash flood potential, if that's something. So, as I say it before we went to break, when I went to San Antonio for the Final Four, I had to fly into Austin. You imagine San Antonio pretty slammed. And you cross this river. You go to Interstate 35. The flood zone where all this took place, about, I don't know, maybe 30, 40 miles to the west of all that. I get it. Like, maybe this is not a good place to put a little girls' camp. We do have these, like, weather events. But, like I said, 108 people confirmed dead. There's just not a whole lot there. Kerrville, Texas. Texas is such a big state, but you do have this it is kind of an untamed place. It's like, I was talking to my grandfather when I was a kid, before they dammed up the rivers and before you had all the hydroelectricity, you used to have all these flood situations, and they did a lot of this in the name of flood control. And you can't help but wonder, I mean, they just haven't done this in Texas. Maybe some of you old timers, I guess you'd have to be more than 100 years old now to remember the pre-dam era of our waterways in the South. But you used to always hear about just bad flooding and these flash floods and the flood control. You didn't have a reservoir to ease the burden on a lot of our waterways. You wonder if some of that's kind of true with Texas. Nowadays, you can never do that. The environmental permitting and all of that is unobtainable. So the finger pointing, the blame, as I said, it's a media creation, and the media, I don't think, are going to really change a lot of hearts and minds. Do they really think Donald Trump is to blame here? It's too shameless. What else we got here? Terry, Ivy keeps the Ethics Commission seats empty to keep them from investigating her corrupt administration. That's always kind of been a suggestion. Should get Rob Hulbert on. I haven't had him on in a long time. A named Dexter. This is Billy D. For the last time, and since Who's Out of War, he talks about never camping your armies next to rivers or streams because they could flood. Well, you remember during Hurricane Helene, right? Interstate 40 through the mountains between Asheville and Knoxville. All of these places, what they did, the path of least resistance when they were building roads was to go through the river valleys. And they followed the Pigeon River up to the Smoky Mountains to get from Asheville to Knoxville. Now, the old original route was to follow, the French Broad River through the mountains down to Knoxville from Asheville. But they said, hey, we could save a lot of money and build the interstate. We kind of, the shortest distance between point A and point B is a straight line, and we try to make it more direct rather than going down through the river valley. But, when you have these 100-year weather events and the rivers exceed the banks, that's what happens. They wash the roads away. And then you build these roads, and then along these roads, people live. They do little developments, communities come to be. Burnsville, North Carolina was one. And they're victim to the flooding. But that was always like, you go in these very mountainous places, and they would build the roadway along the riverbank. But that turned out not to be wise in the end, and they're going to have to grapple with that. 251-343-0106. We got to get a break here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
What I got is mine. I ain't rich, but Lord, I'm free. Amarillo by
to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. If you want to be in touch with the program, 251-343-0106. 800-516-0606. You would have, that's the text line. Utilize the text line. A few other headlines. Our friend Tom Butler, you may not know him. He was a regular on my radio show in Huntsville. Every Monday we would have him on. Not seeking re-election. So a long time state senator, a good guy. It was a party switcher, I guess, around 2014 or so. I became a Republican, but from Madison, our Huntsville area is not seeking re-election. So he'll be missed. I really liked Senator Butler. UAW, speaking of Huntsville, they're trying to unionize all the auto plants up there. UAW doesn't give up, do they? This push to unionize, and you know, they're not really batting very. They got a very abysmal batting average when they try to unionize in this state. The Amazon facilities, the auto plants. And that was always like, you know, sort of the wink and the nod. Hey, come to Alabama. We're a right-to-work state. We're hostile toward unions. And UAW, they aren't going to give up. They look at Alabama as a fertile ground, but the public, I don't think, is really on board with the organized labor approach. Do we care that Netanyahu is flattering Trump with a formal Nobel Peace Prize nomination? By that Nobel Peace Prize stuff, well, number one, Trump's never going to get it. But these awards are used in such a way to try to influence policy, encourage left of center activity, I guess. So this is the same with the Pulitzer Prize, right? Senator Elliott, our returning champion, 18-19 story yesterday, wanting a more robust approach to illegal immigration and hiring illegal immigrants, E-Verify. Now, as the black market has shown, it found a way around that. And then finally, Coach out criticizing Karen Bass, who now is engaging in her own, with all the problems of that city. And I'm not, you know, that she's really like focused on ICE, but they have the recovering from the wildfires of Pacific Palisades, just a really inept response to that, and then public safety concerns, homeless concerns. Like, is anybody saying, hey, Los Angeles is the model for the way cities should be ran in America? No. Like, their idealism. I mean, just mass. When you have, you know, big mass population centered in one place, obviously it's going to be fraught with problems. But I look at these cities like L.A., New York, Chicago, and they're not templates for how it is to be done. I got a couple of texts to get to here before we get to our next guest. Epstein was a rich pervert doing what perverts do. Why does this have to be a conspiracy theory attached to it? I'm sure he paid out plenty of hush money over the years. Yeah, but it wasn't so much just him doing perverted things. You know, she had some very elite individuals coming, you know, and going from his island there. And then finally, Derek, need them dues, talking about the UAW push to unionize a lot of places in this state. Yeah, but like I said, they haven't had a lot of success. It's very underwhelming. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Ford Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Treat you bad. what I had. But honey, now I
welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. 251-343-0106. That's the text line. You can be in touch with me, your show host. Utilize the text line, and we'll respond to whatever it is that is on your mind. Still to come on the program about an hour from now, Chairman of the Alabama Republican Party, John Wall, will be with us. So stay tuned for that. Joining us now on the line, he's our state auditor. He is running for Secretary of State. We heard from his opponent last week. Now he has an opponent, Caroline Dobson. Y'all know her from the 2nd Congressional District race this last cycle. But our state auditor joins us on the line now, Andrew Sorrell. Andrew, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. I'm doing well. Thank you for getting me on again.
Hey, thanks for making time. Well, you and I are talking offline. The campaign is taking a turn. Now you have an opponent. There was always talk that she would get in this race, and then there wasn't. Where are you at these days?
Well, I'm continuing to run my race. I mean, whether I have an opponent or not, I've been working hard the last 11 months. Even without an opponent, I was wearing myself out. I've already been to 55 counties and done a campaign event, so should have one campaign stop done in all 67 counties here within the next, I'd say, 2 months. I've got them all booked out. Fundraising has been going really, really well, historically well, in fact. If you look at the two previous successful candidates for Secretary of State, that would be Wes Allen and John Merrill. I'm about doubling their fundraising pace, what they were doing when they started filing their initial, reports. I managed to raise over $64,000 last month. By the way, only a couple thousand, that's PAC money. Everything else is individuals and businesses who just support me and my candidacy. So I think that sends a strong message to Montgomery. Raised $114,000 in 43 days, since the fundraising opened on May 19th. So again, just off to a historic start there. And I think that just illustrates the amount of momentum behind my campaign. And there's a lot of individual donors in there as well. So anyway, just continuing to run my race, continuing to hit the talk radio circuit, get around the state, I'm excited about where we're at, Jeff.
It's kind of interesting with her approach, and I don't want to make it necessarily all about her, but she's really leaning in on the role, the Secretary of State's office. Obviously, elections are important, but sort of how it functions is in the state's economy, business licensing, et cetera, and making things run smoother. Now, I think you got to credit Secretary Merrill's tenure and changing a lot of what has happened over the years and just sort of the time and ease of things. But, with all of the discussion about elections and the emphasis put on election integrity, like the other side of what the Secretary of State does, how much of a focus? Talk about that a little bit, if you would.
Well, we've talked about this before. There's over 1,000 duties assigned to the Secretary of State under state law. So I feel like the legislature, anytime they have a duty they need to stick somewhere and they don't know where to put it, they give it to the Secretary of State. So he ends up with kind of a hodgepodge. I mean, you have athletic agents that register with the Secretary of State. You serve on the Election Reimbursement Committee. Of course, you're the chief elections official for the state. There are always special elections going on, Jeff. Every time you turn around, there's a special election somewhere. So you're never really out of an election cycle. Of course, you've got the municipals going on right now. And for the first time ever, all the municipal candidates in Alabama are filing their reports with the Secretary of State, which I think is a great thing. For number one, it's just easier. The online reports are very easy to file. And number two, for transparency's sake, I mean, if I want to pull a Orange Beach city councilman, for instance, see how much money the guy's raising, I shouldn't have to come down to Orange Beach and contact a probate judge or something like that. It's just that's an old, antiquated way of doing things. I'm so happy that they're all filing online with the Secretary of State now, and we can view their reports just like you would any candidate for a state office. But on the other side, you do have the business services. And I think, a lot of people, probably the majority of the people who interact with the Secretary of State's office are there not for elections. Normal people aren't running for office. Normal people are not, every now and then you get somebody doing an international adoption. They come through the Secretary of State's office. But what most people are interacting with us over is the business services division. And that's going to be, UCC filings. It's going to be entity creation, dissolution, update your business records, your business is registered agent, things like that. And we talked about this before, but I think the fees are really high on some of these things. In fact, some would say exorbitant. You know, it's a $100 fee to update your business as registered agent. That's a simple name and address change. I filled the form out before. It took me less than a minute to fill the form out. I thought, this should be $10. This shouldn't be $100. And I know business owners out there, I can name you a couple, I won't, but I could, that refuse to update their business as registered agent because the fee's too high. Like, I'm not paying $100 for that. So we end up with less accurate information at the Secretary of State's office because the fee is too high. So I'm going to go through those 9 pages of fees and I'm going to cut them. And this fee is absolutely exorbitant. The one I'm about to tell you about, the fee to purchase Alabama's voter rolls, $38,000. It's a penny a record, and there's 3.8 million registered voters right now on the Alabama voter rolls. Now, to put this in perspective, you could purchase all 49 other states' voter rolls for a total of $53,000, but just Alabama's is $38,000. I think the fee is so high that it's actually breaking the law. There's some discussion over whether the 1993 Federal Voting Rights Act, it limits it to a reasonable fee, and other states have been taken to court over their fees being too high, and their fees are less than half of what ours was, and they still lost in court. So before we get sued by somebody, we need to reduce this fee. I'm going to do that day one. I plan to cut that fee by 90%. I'm considering even cutting it by 99%. If other states can provide their voter rolls for a few hundred or a few thousand dollars, then why can't we? And it's not like you're printing them off for people. You're emailing it to them or you're downloading it onto a flash drive and sending it to them. Like, this is not hard. It's not complicated stuff. And downloading 3.8 million doesn't really take you any longer than downloading 38,000 for a, you know, state house district. So I don't understand why that fee has to be so high, but that's the attitude we need going in. We need to slash and burn the fees. We need to make it quicker, easier than ever before for people to do business with the state of Alabama.
That's what they always do in this state is, you know, they pass all these transparency measures, pat themselves on the back. But when you want to actually, you know, engage in the public records or whatever it may be, the voter rolls, they make it so cost prohibitive that people just, you know, that they will not, they just don't utilize it.
Well, you're right. And I'm glad you brought this up because I explained that the fee is too high, but let me explain why it's important that the fee be lowered. Cause I think we're missing that part of the discussion. It is for transparency. The public rolls, the voter rolls are supposed to be public. So every 2 years, 2 weeks before the primary, the probate judge in all 67 counties has to publish in a newspaper general circulation a list of the registered voters. That is for transparency's sake. So everybody in the county can see who's on the voter rolls, who are the eligible electors for the upcoming election. Okay, that's what we're trying to allow people to see. Well, let's say that you wanted to see who was going to vote in Alabama. So you have two choices. You can either drive around and purchase a newspaper in all 67 counties, or you can buy the list from the Secretary of State's office. Neither of those are acceptable options in the 21st century. How long? It would take you days of driving around to locate a newspaper in all the counties. And if you don't have $38,000, option B is not an option either. We need to prove to the public that our voter rolls are clean. And we don't need to look like we're hiding something. And if our fees are reasonable enough that the average person could purchase a copy of the voter rolls and say, all right, Aunt Maud died 3 years ago. Is she still on the voter? Oh, no, she's been removed. Great. That's what's supposed to happen. And guess what? If Aunt Maud still is on the voter rolls, then you've got a problem. But the person can see that and they can report it. You know, we have people moving out of state now. I have a friend who moved to Texas 5 years ago, got married and moved to Texas 5 years ago. Still on our voter rolls. Okay? That's a problem. Now, thankfully, Wes Allen has partnered with Texas recently. And this AVID, this Alabama Voter Integrity Database, where we're sharing our voter list with other states, we just partnered with Texas a few months ago. So that one's going to get caught, I guarantee you. When they do the duplicate check between the two states' voter rolls, that one's going to get caught, and she's going to be removed. And I'm actually watching that one to make sure that that happens. But that's the kinds of things you can do when you have access to the voter rolls. So for transparency's sake, if you're a election integrity activist, or if you're a member of a group, one of these election integrity groups that wants to make sure that the state is keeping the voter rolls clean, you got to be able to purchase the voter rolls in order to do that.
Well, and is it some of this that they sort of create a marketplace that keeps certain people out of, like, politics. And so it's very costly to obtain the voter rolls, and you need to do business, and you need a copy of that. You need to run for office. You need to know who's in your, you know, in who to target or whatever. But the way to get it, it's very expensive, but, you know, it makes it hard for just anybody to run and have that tool in their tool chest. I mean, there's like some of that going on, you think?
You know, this is really interesting, the speculation behind why our fee is so high. And I wasn't around when this fee was set. And a penny a name doesn't sound high at the offset until you realize there's 3.8 million voters. And then you do the math on it, you're like, oh my goodness, it's $38,000 to purchase our voter rolls. But yeah, maybe it was some incumbents that said, hey, we have money. Like, incumbents love high qualifying fees. So in Alabama, under Alabama law, the maximum a party can charge you is 2% of the salary. So if the job pays $50,000, the max qualifying fee you can be charged is $1,000. Well, incumbents like those fees to be high because the incumbents usually have the money, right? They have the PAC money flowing from Montgomery. It's easy for them to have access to money while the challengers have more difficulty raising money. It's just the nature of the beast in politics. Well, same thing possibly with the voter rolls. Maybe that was the motivation behind making the voter rolls cost so much is the incumbents can afford it and their challengers cannot. I could definitely see that possibly being a motivation in the past. Now, that motivation has mostly been removed, at least if you're running as a Republican, because about 5 years ago, the Alabama Republican Party voted to allow anyone access to the voter rolls for their district. So the Republican and Democrat parties both have access to the statewide voter rolls, and they can share that with whoever they want to. So let's say that, Jeff, you wanted to run for state house down there in Fairhope. If you declared as a candidate for state house, you would immediately have access through the Republican Party, through GOP data center. You would have access where you can view the voter rolls, download them, create walkbooks, you know, do your mailers, all that kind of stuff. So I don't think if that was the original motivation, that has mostly been canceled out because there's a way to get it for free now through the Republican Party. But if you're a municipal candidate, maybe you're running for mayor of Fairhope, for instance, you want to get the voter rolls. Well, you can't get that through the Republican Party because it's not a partisan race. So you'd have to purchase the voter rolls then. So anyway, there are numerous good reasons for us to reduce the cost of the business service fees. And yeah, that's something I've been talking about for the last 11 months. Business service fees and service fees to the general public.
Let's look at the other side of this. Like how much work, how much time, how many resources go into providing these? So how would you account for whatever, you know, would you have to have multiple people doing this whenever someone requests a voter list? What would the cost have to be to make this available?
Yeah, so there are people in the Secretary of State in the Elections Division that do this when they get these requests come in for the data. You know, you can call up there and order whatever you want. You can say, I want to buy Calhoun County's voter list, you know, and they would download it for you and charge you the appropriate amount. And maybe it's a little bit labor intensive because we're having employees do it. Maybe we could set it up to where it works more like the GOP data center where you get in there as a customer, as an end user, and you do your own sorting and you say, I want to download Calhoun County's voter list. And then it just downloads that, and after you just pay the fee online, and then you just download it there. That would make way more sense than having a person take their time from whatever important election stuff they're actually trying to work on in the Elections Division over there at Secretary of State, from having them pull it. It'd make way more sense to just have the end user do it. And you could sit there and you could play around with it. You could say, well, I can't really afford to buy the whole county. Maybe I'll just purchase the high-frequency voters, the people who vote at least 75% of the time. I want to buy that voter list. And you could play around with that and only pay for what you need. I think that would be a much better system.
Yeah, it's just, you know, having that sort of a la carte approach and knowing, having to weed through it, seems like that's also could be labor intensive as well. But I, you know, it just looks to me, Andrew, that whenever we talk about this and have these discussions, we got to this point somehow, some way. And whenever it's brought up, I get pushed back, you know, probate judges or whatever. And they're really kind of not liking the idea of having this added duty to for the sake of transparency.
Well, you know, you're right about that. But of course, the probate judges don't sell voter lists. That's only done through the Secretary of State's office. If you call the probate judge and request a copy, they're going to say, well, they're either going to refer you to the newspaper you can purchase, or they're going to refer you to the Secretary of State's office. So as far as this particular fee is concerned, I don't think the probate judges would have any issues with lowering the fee or keeping it. I think they're ambivalent to it, honestly. But, you know, if you want to shut down your business entity, you know, it's another $100 fee. You know, and Jeff, I've been saying for 11 months on the campaign trail, nobody shuts down their business because it's making lots of money, right? You only shut it down if your business is losing money or if you're not using the entity anymore, then you would shut it down. But the Secretary of State's office kind of kicks you in the rear on the way out the door with another $100 fee to close your entity down. So, I mean, that one should just be free. You know, we already charge you, it's like $200 to create an entity and another $28 to reserve your name, you know, for your entity. So it's $228 to open an entity in Alabama. That's high enough, but goodness, we shouldn't charge you another $100 if your business doesn't work out and you need to close it down. And Jeff, a lot of people, especially people in real estate, they put one property per LLC. So if they've got 10 apartment complexes, they're operating 10 different LLCs, and the fees really add up on this stuff.
Well, I was going to ask you real quick, because we got to get out of here. We're almost out of time, but like, do they make money off of this? Like, you know, like all these, like, does this allow these government agencies to operate in the black? What do they do with all of these fees?
Well, you got to remember, the Secretary of State's office receives $0 from the general fund. So they are completely self-supporting. The only revenue the Secretary of State's office has is through fees, and almost all of the fees they charge are business services. So we can't completely gut business service fees because Secretary of State has to have something to operate on. That being said, the budget increased from $6.5 million to $7.5 million last fiscal year. So, I mean, if you're jumping up $1 million in your budget, I think there's plenty of room there to reduce costs.
Andrew Fossil, to find out more about your campaign, how can they do so?
Yeah, multiple ways. You can go to andrewsorrell.com. That's the easiest way, S-O-R-R-E-L-L. And you can also find me on Facebook, Andrew Sorrell for Secretary of State, and, of course, Twitter, Instagram. Just opened up a LinkedIn account, so we're everywhere now.
Andrew, we appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks so much, Jeff.
All right, let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Right up over Spanish Fort into Mobile, my hometown. Mr. T. Sitting here at the Floribam, about to open up a big old can. Good time, unwind, falling out of love in the same night. Say I got a whole lot of cares. I'm in the redneck Riviera. It's getting crazy. I'm getting hammered, sitting right here at the Floribama.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. Bunch of texts to get to here. Start with Jerry. Alabama is a right-to-work state for less state that will tax your overtime and piss the money away. Let's see. David in Fairhope. Hey, Jeff, any comment on Marjorie Taylor Greene's latest introduced bill? Remind me what that is, David. John, I thought Alabama was one of the most union-friendly states around with the UMW. Is Alabama not one of the most union-friendly states in the South? Maybe in the South, but the South is not union-friendly at all. And it's never been. It's never been, and it's just not in the DNA for organized labor. Some of that is just institutional. But you see what happens. These, and the story I always like to tell, Monroeville, Alabama, 1920s, and the arrival, or maybe 1930s, whatever, the arrival of Vanity Fair from Pennsylvania. And he had all the cotton, and he had the cheap labor. And then every now and then you would have somebody come south to Monroeville trying to unionize, and there would be, they would show up at the hotel or the motel and with the pitchforks and torches and run the guy out and tell them to, you're not going to unionize here. Because we know how this ends. Yeah, sure. The benefits are good, and things, your wages go up, but what inevitably happens is the union shop becomes too cost prohibitive, and the corporation, whatever, manufacturing, textiles, leave for somewhere else. Now, this happened to Monroeville not because of unions, but because the labor, they chased the labor to after NAFTA to Latin America, then to China, now Southeast Asia, where a lot of your garments are made. I mean, just for pennies on the dollar compared to what it costs to manufacture something in the United States. That's what's happened. But the idea was that these places where you didn't have a lot of manufacturing, if you kept the unions away, it would encourage these companies to build facilities in your state. And that's what the South had done maybe most of the 20th century. And that's changing now just because of the globalization of the economy. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk.
From Buck's Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between, an insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. Hour number three begins right now. Still to come on the program about 30 minutes from now, we'll hear from Alabama Republican Party Chairman John Wall. So stay tuned for that. We'll get through the text line. Just a few. Well, we got more than a few. West Texas, this is from Backstrap. West Texas is different. The grounds in the hill country is rocky, doesn't absorb water, rainwater. There are areas south of Austin towards Wimberley where you have flood level markers at every large dip in a row. When it rains, the dry beds fill quickly. I feel the same thing happened in Wimberley a few years ago, and many millions of homes are washed away. The Bronco River runs right through Wimberley and is normally a trickle until it is not. Yeah. Suspect you're right. Just knowing that, it's a lot of water all at once. Let's see. Terry, amazing how the national news is downplaying gun violence when it is their minions trying to ambush federal agents in an armed insurrection. You hear this, was it Stephen Miller was on one of the Fox shows, Jesse Waters, last night. And he outright called the left in America, the Democratic Party, who are encouraging, maybe not explicitly, but they're encouraging this and calling them the insurrectionist. And I don't know, you know, there's a military presence in L.A., it's not going to end well. And if you're betting, now you put the politics aside, I mean, who are you betting on in this standoff? The federal government are the ambitious left-wing politicians of the day. Fired on conspiracy theory. Conspiracies these days are really hard to keep under wraps. There's always somebody somewhere who's wanting to leak something. But the leak game is such... The leak game is hard to play because of the way the media are. I don't know, DC media, it's like high school. I mean, this is your social network. And you play by a certain set of rules. It's just polite company, the way you talk to these guys. You want to go to the cool parties. You want to sit at the cool kids' lunch table. Well, you don't do certain things. I just watched my former boss, Tucker Carlson. In the 90s and early 2000s, I mean, he was to go along, to get along guy. I mean, he wrote for all the cool magazines, went to the cool parties, lived in the neighborhood. I'd been to his house there near Georgetown. That was a neighborhood where he had a lot of elite household brands and American politics live. It's a good part of Washington, D.C., and then he sort of evolved. He was always on the right side, the right of center. But you know, you got to remember in Washington, D.C. politics, you allow like, you have a few of their Republican counterparts, the educated, maybe they're just wrong, but they're nice guys. And they give us something to ponder, to talk about. It's harmless. They're wrong, but we'll offer them an opportunity to speak. And he was sort of that guy. And then as like he his father was very aware of what was going on in that town, and he kind of learned from him. Now the town's not the same anymore. It's gotten way more big government, bureaucratic. Some will say deep state. Deep state's always kind of been there. But you see how, like, once he goes Fox News and has to move on from that, and now is living in Maine or in Florida part-time, and not really at the cool kids' lunch table anymore. Once you break away, once you start talking about certain things that are considered not polite, you get blackballed. Butterknife, I have an LLC, so I could get the tax benefits of it. If we're complaining about the price of opening up an LLC, we have no problems. Mike, the Sorrell adoption race is going to be a good one if Caroline doesn't fix her consistent saying she'll not be able to debate Sorrell. I don't think you're going to have very many Secretary of State debates. What are they going to argue about? Jerry, well, Jeff, the AEA seems to be doing well with the supermajority in Montgomery. Right? They're not doing as well as they were when Paul Hubbard was around. It's a lot harder for the AEA to operate. Jerry, and there's whole discussions to be had. But I think they're way smarter. They're less. It's less about their egos. Now they put out this newsletter quarterly. It's just, and it really plays hard into what they've always done. But you don't have the sort of flashy, in your face bravado of the AA of yesteryear, and they. Some of that's for our benefit or for our consumption. They don't want you to – they want you to take AEA out of sight, out of mind, so that the masses don't get irritated with the AEA like they did once upon a time. But it's also the dirty little secret is the fall of the AEA was more about the AEA getting in the way of the big mules. Who was the architect of – the 2010 Republican takeover of Montgomery? It's a guy named Bill Canary at the BCA. And BCA membership was looking at sort of the landscape and like, why are we having to check all the boxes for the teachers union before we get what we want? We've been doing this for 100 years, and now all of a sudden the teachers union is now the priority for the Alabama legislature? And Democrats had become so beholden to the teachers union that they went down swinging. And what was kind of politically savvy is Canary and Mike Hubbard and others looked at the winds of change were coming. Alabama had to go Republican at some point or another. And it was time for the big mules under the banner of the BCA to pony up and move the legislature from this, I would say politically untenable position of being held by Democrats to being a Republican supermajority as it is today. But you had to extricate the AEA from the equation, and they were successful. So we had to think, well, Republicans finally prevailed, and conservative philosophy has finally triumphed over liberal philosophy. But part of it, some of that's true. I'm not denying that. I think it's, but what really happened, the teachers union, it kind of overstepped its boundaries, made a lot of enemies in that town. And then finally they said, enough of this. We're not going to play second fiddle to the teachers union, the big banks, healthcare, universities, higher ed, now a big mule, I would argue. They said no more. Power company. We're not going to make sure that Paul Hubbard gets his back pat, his belly rubbed, and we're not going to operate that way. It was kind of cute for, you know, a couple of decades, but we're tired of it now. So it took that, and kind of the emotional dissatisfaction of Washington, D.C. politics. You combine those two, and you got what you got today. And AEA has, like, gotten smarter about it. So, well, we can't be like we used to be. We can still get what we want, keep our membership happy. Be dark. If everyone starts buying foreign goods for 3 months, there would not be a reason for tariffs. All the prices would drop. What would you buy? I mean, everything is so manufactured overseas. Mike, I grew up anti-union, but the further Alabama state legislature goes down the corporatist trail, the more I see the benefit of organized labor. Yeah, you know, Mike, and I hear that a lot. That's actually, it's a check on big business. It's a check on what, well, you know, these auto manufacturers who get everything they ask for. Tax abatement. You know, you drive like Mercedes or Hyundai and wherever, and you see these roads that have been built by the state of Alabama, the water and sewer hookup, that they get these concessions for locating in Alabama that you and I would never get if we wanted to build, you know, not that we had the wherewithal. A new texter, we need to highlight Cynthia Allman's replacement at HD 63 is literally on the BCA board of directors. I was not aware of that. Need to look at that. Butterknife. Jeff, we could not afford a real tax break in Alabama with School Choice Act in Alabama. How can Alabama continue to fund public schools and fund private schools? Well, and the pro-school choice people would argue you need to look at not funding schools, but funding students. And as I said, in the Jeff Poor philosophy, we agreed a long time ago that everybody should get some element of education. You're entitled to it. You need it. You need it for society to function. You've got to have that education. You got to know how to add. You got to know how to read. You got to know some basics just to make it in life. Because if you're uneducated, you don't have that, then society crumbles. So we agreed upon that. When we said, okay, even if you don't have kids, you still got to put into the public education because you're going to still benefit from it. Well, now you look at it, if I'm a parent and I have a child who's entitled to this public education, I know I'm going to get pushback from somebody who doesn't have kids. Setting myself up here. But if your child's entitled to this public education, you decide to go about it on your own with homeschooling or private schooling, you're taking that burden away from the government. You as a, by the existence of having, you know, their existence of having kids, they're entitled to that education, whether you wanted to have them or not, whatever. So you should get something in return. Why should you have to pay double freight if you're not using the public schools? 251-340-1106 is the text line. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
but somehow on and on I go. I keep on rolling with the flow. Folks said that I... He asked me how I bought it. I told him on credit. Daddy just smiled. I'll never forget it. Said some things just glitter and shine.
Welcome back to the Jeff Horst Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Lost the one thing money couldn't buy.
251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with the program. Utilize the text line. Butter Knife adds, with Obamacare passing, since the government is willing to help everybody with their health insurance, can I get a refund since I do it myself? But we never agreed that you were entitled as a society to a minimal amount of health care. That's the difference here. Like, I didn't make this decision, but the standards in this country where everybody, it's compulsory. Now, they tried to, I guess, make health care compulsory, and that failed. But school is, your education is, like, everybody has to get it. You can't have a society with uneducated masses that can't function, make the economy work. Like they decided, we need everybody to be able to read and write and things like that. Now, some, you know, slip through the cracks, obviously. Healthcare wouldn't apply to healthcare. So, so they're going to start cutting funding to public schools because it's your choice. Well, I mean, it's what the people want in a government for, of, and by the people. The basis is we have compulsory education. It's not we have public schools, that you may or may not use. You should get something in return. And there's like a philosophy here. I guess it's like a Milton Friedman that if you create, and I don't think it applies to government, but here it goes, that you create this market system where private schools are competing with public schools. The public schools will get better. That at some point we'll have to start downsizing public schools if people stop going to public schools. And everything will be, they'll get better because they want the money. They will work harder to achieve a better outcome, a better education for your children. Terry, ICE agents targeted in two ambush attacks in recent days. I think it's just all the demagoguery. Did you hear about the anti-immigrant riots in Mexico over the weekend? They didn't want gringos in their country working illegally. CB Carl, you keep talking about public schools like you've never been to Walmart or had to deal with the predominantly undereducated products in that system. Also, they say without public education, society would crumble. You need to look around and see what's going on. Well, CB Carl, what do you think it would be like without any education? Now, you talk about Walmart. What do you think it would be like if you had no education? You talk like that these people are uneducated as it is. But they got to where they are. And it's not just education. I mean, there's a socialization. There's a lot of components that go into the public schools or why we have them. But if you go to Walmart and you strip that away, what do you think Walmart looks like then, CB Carl? Jerry, your buddy over at Lineup has a slimy hit piece out of my friend in Orange Beach. Has he been hanging out with his AL.com buddies again? Who is my friend buddy at Lineup? Hey, Jerry, when you use words like buddy, you really irritate me. I'm going to start ascribing your relationships with, like, people, and you don't even name them by name. Fire Dog. We have people graduating high school who can't read or write or do math in their head. Hell, they can't even make change. So there's no contract that everybody gets educated. But there is the social contract is that you're entitled to it. It's not that you necessarily get it. You could be led to water, but you're not going to drink it. But you are, you at least have the opportunity to be led to the water. That's what we decided. You can't make people do things and create an outcome. But you had the opportunity. We got to have that there. Jerry, you're on the verge of being banned. You're just catching me at a bad time here. Keep pushing it, Jerry. And you'll be heard on Mobile Mornings and Midday Mobile, not the Jeff Flohr Show. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Flohr Show at FM Talk 106.5.